All positive natural health programs on HRNradio.com.
Hi, everybody. Helping yourself to know-how is why you're here with Dr. Greer, and you're listening to the Doctor on Call Hour at HealthyLife.net. Well, it's hot, it's happening, it's sizzling, and yes, it's Let's Talk Sex time, except it's not exactly hot here in New York City. But before we start, don't forget that Shrink Wrap is in Celebrity Page Magazine. It's available on your newsstands. Grab your monthly copy for an extra dose of celebrity news. So welcome to the show. It's going to be a great one with wedding planner Sandy Malone and author Antonia Hall. Joining me now is my first guest, Sandy Malone. Sandy's a political journalist turned successful destination wedding planner who owns and operates Sandy Malone Weddings and Events and Weddings in Vieques. She opens the windows wide on wedding planning services for DIY brides and grooms, in addition to wedding and event clients seeking traditional hometown and destination wedding planning services. Sandy was the star of TLC's reality show Wedding Island, which has garnered several awards. She's also an internationally syndicated wedding columnist with regular blogs in The Huffington Post, Brides, Monsters and Critics, Purple Unions, and more. And I am always delighted to welcome Sandy back to the show, so thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for asking me, Dr. Greer. It's always fun to talk with you.
It's always a pleasure. You are chock full of such great information. You've been hands-on on the front line with all these couples all this time, so you can really give us the inner scoop on what's happening. So let's just start with, everybody thinks happily ever after, you get married, your honeymoon, before you even get to the honeymoon, your wedding night is all full of fun, fabulous sex. It's as sexy as can be. And is that really the case? I mean, rumor has it that a lot of couples who ultimately wind up with an active sex life get really completely off track as the wedding day is coming. What do you hear and what do you know?
Well, from my grooms, I work with lots and lots of couples. And from my grooms that I work with, I hear over and over about how the girl.
Hello? So we're talking about what's normal for couples as they're approaching their wedding days and dealing with being sexual. And Sandy, you were telling us about the grooms that you have the inside scoop to and what some of the things they talk about. Can you pick up with that?
Sure. You know, it's funny because I hear two main complaints in a humorous sense about sex from my grooms in the weeks leading up to the wedding. The first one is that, you know, it really is going to feel like the first time after their wedding because they haven't had any. And their brides are all stressed out and they're not able to get them interested in anything romantic.
Right.
It's ironic because they're about to get married. You think it'd be the most romantic time ever, but it's not. And, you know, the brides are having a tough time. And then the funniest thing is because there's something grooms and I both hate equally, and they hate Pinterest. Because they go to bed at night, and they like a little romance, and their bride's sitting next to them with an iPad, checking for last-minute favor ideas, and have we done the best day for us? I mean, my God, you can fall down the rabbit hole of Pinterest and stay there for 8 hours.
Right. It's so fascinating, though, because you would think exactly that as you're getting closer to the wedding, the more romantic and the more connected you'd be. But you're absolutely right. You've got the inside scoop there. I hear it inside my office from couples, and there's disappointment because not only does the sometimes amount and frequency of sex diminish, but also I've heard many couples will talk about as well that even on their wedding night, the notion is that, well, you're going to be sexual and, you know, solidify the wedding and your marriage, but a lot of times couples are wiped out and they make love the next morning or the night of. They're so wiped out from the wedding and the greeting and the hellos, and people will tell me, I don't know, were we supposed to actually then have sex as well? Have you heard that too?
Well, look, I'm glad that these brides and grooms are out of bed at 9 o'clock in the morning on the wedding day. And the girls are getting up because if they've got a big wedding party, hair and makeup, all the beauty stuff starts early. Mm. And the guys are waking up because the girls are kicking them out. even if they got to sleep in their own bed the night before, there's a lot of grooms, like my husband, got kicked out of the room the night before the wedding. You know, you don't want to mess with tradition there. And so What happens is on the wedding day, you're not just tired because you had a long day. You are so tense, you know, happy as you can be. It's exhausting, you know. A lot of brides will tell me that they were on such an adrenaline high through the ceremony and their entrance and their first dance, and when they sit down for dinner, it's kind of that feeling like they get hit by a ton of bricks because they've been going so hard and so fast, and it's the first time they get a chance to breathe. And so, you know, you get through dinner, and then you party with your friends all night, and let's assume you're drinking in most cases. And then a lot of couples, that wedding reception wraps up at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and then there's an after-hours party that's going to go till 2 or 3 in the morning. Depending on where you are. And then, you know, it depends, again, if you're at home or if you're at a destination wedding. If you're going back to your hotel and a lot of friends are around with you, you may be up even later. So often, by the time they have left the party and headed back to their room, either the bride or the groom is just flat out on their face. The groom isn't even sober enough to have sex at that point.
Right.
And, you know, the guys have been giving him sex for many hours.
Yeah, but you have really valuable information, I must tell you, because you're so right. I hear it from people, then after the wedding, they had a little party, you know, at another restaurant. Just they went and changed clothes, casual, went and had some, you know, appetizers and drinks to hang out with their friends now that they did the whole family thing. And the truth of the matter is, a lot of times couples do not realize that this is okay. And they come away feeling like somehow they've done something awful or wrong, or they, you know, what's wrong with us, or, you know, does this mean our marriage is off to a bad start? I think it's an important piece of information for all of you out there listening who are getting married or who were married recently to know that when you have sex, if it's not necessarily automatically on your wedding night, it doesn't mean anything's wrong. Don't you think?
I think that for a lot of couples, the wedding night, per se, that traditional night where you consummate the marriage, first off, that went out the window years ago because very, very, very few couples haven't had sex prior to their wedding. But I think that the wedding night has kind of, in my mind and in most brides' minds, moved to the first night of the honeymoon together. Because
right. That
wedding, you know, once upon a time, you got married, and at the end of the reception, everybody saw you off to your car, and you drove away with tin cans on it, and you tonight someplace fabulous, or you went to, you know, you got right on an airplane, and that's not really the way it's done anymore. In fact, whether you're having a home or destination wedding, some sort of a day-after event, a farewell brunch, et cetera, is actually quite common because people want to see all their out-of-town relatives for more than a quick drive-by at their wedding. So, you know, you have to think about all the things that brides and grooms have on their minds, not just the brides, but all the things brides and grooms have on their minds. If they are leaving the morning after their wedding, you know how many of them at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, when you would imagine they'd be stripping naked and the bride's putting on crazy sexy white lingerie, they're actually cleaning up a complete disaster zone in the bridal suite? No, because they've got to be packed and out of there to catch their flight at 9 or 10 the next morning.
Right.
So it's not at all surprising. You know, Jane, my wedding night, truth, no sex. You know why?
Why?
Because by the time we got back to the room after the reception, and we were all at a hotel in Puerto Rico, the Hacienda San Marino, and everybody's hanging out at the pool because we'd taken over the whole hotel. We went to bed at 2 or 3 in the morning, and I was freed from my crazy dress with 100 silk buttons. I put on that sexy negligee that I'd gotten at my lingerie bridal shower, and I was all excited. And I had plugged in our telephone chest. And this was not a time in life where your phone rang 24 hours a day. Yeah, I got married in 2004. And your phone didn't ring quite so 24 hours a day then. So I plugged in our phones to charge so they'd be in good shape when we left on our honeymoon the next day. About 5 minutes after we got in bed and started getting romantic, my telephone rang. No, and do you know what it was?
Did you answer it?
I did. It was a security company calling from our house in D.C., and my husband was a police captain.
Holy God.
A security company was calling to tell me that a emergency sensor had gone off in the house, and that nobody was answering. And we had a house sitter because we had a new puppy, and nobody was answering the telephone. And should they send the police? And I said, yes, send the police.
Oh, my God.
No, and you know what happened? We got a phone call about 5 minutes later from a police sergeant that worked in our neighborhood, who was friendly with my husband, asking if we had given permission for a Catholic university party in our house.
Oh, my God.
200 college and postgraduate students. They'd actually moved our stereo system speakers outside to put next to the tiki bar they'd built next to our hot tub.
I can't believe this. Just a second. Did they know your husband was the captain of the police? Are they crazy?
Yeah, she knew her husband was a police captain. She was a law student at Catholic University and actually a family friend. Her aunt had been my babysitter. And,
oh, my God.
It was fairly horrifying because the police over an hour to clear our house and the block. And by the time that was all resolved and the last phone call was in from our police friends, we went to bed.
Well, sex was out the window at that point. That's pretty...
Nothing amorous going on in our room at that point.
That's pretty amazing. But talk about weathering a crisis on your honeymoon night, on your wedding night. That's pretty amazing.
But it made for fantastic stories at the farewell brunch the next morning, let me tell you.
I'll bet. So, but both of you, under circumstances like that, those which are clearly extenuating circumstances, it's understandable that sex is going to be moved to the back burner because you're dealing with a hands-on crisis, for goodness sakes. But
I don't think that that is all that dissimilar from the mental state of many brides.
Well said. So that's the analogy, that many brides are feeling like they're dealing with a complete alert crisis going on, that everything is over their heads and happening, and it's more than they can deal with at one time.
Well, most of the girls, most of the men and women, are walking back into their rooms, which generally speaking looks like bombs went off. Really good bridesmaids. Yeah, unless they're real good bridesmaids who went in and put it back together, and I will tell you that's only a very small percentage of wedding parties that makes the effort to untrash a room. And so if bride and groom aren't in a rush, if they're staying where they're getting married for a few more days,
right,
they don't
right.
have an obligation first thing in the morning, and they're not feeling pressure to try and capture a few hours of sleep. I think that's what it's about. It's that pressure thing.
If they don't
feel the pressure, then they can whoop it up all night long. But if they're exhausted, if they have had too much to drink, if they are looking down the barrel of another day of activities the next day, plus trying to leave on a honeymoon, pack, clean up the mess, if you don't have a wedding planner, you're trying to make sure you pay all the vendors, take care of all of your tear-down responsibilities. You know, the wedding, it's not all over with the wedding. And I think a lot of girls tell me that the first night of the honeymoon isn't even the best night either. It's like the second night. Because you get to your honeymoon, and it takes you 24 hours to unwind.
Right.
You know, you might have sex that first night, but the mind-blowing, oh, my God, we're married, sex happens the next night.
Yeah, it's so fascinating because there's such a myth. There are so many myths about sex, you know, that sex is like what's goes on in the movies. You meet somebody, you know, you have this passion, you rip each other's clothes off, it's great sex, there's very little foreplay, and everybody's having orgasms, you know, and the truth is that is the myth that's out there, and it starts with you have this wonderful romantic sex on your wedding night, and you have this, you know, fabulous dynamic sex life after you're married, and exactly what you are describing and sharing, that there are so many compelling circumstances which factor into the wedding that really can kick sex out of the equation for some of those times. It's so important for people to know that so that, like you said before, the expectations are realistic.
Well, and they say that sex is more of a physical thing for men where it's a mental thing for women. And, you know, my girlfriends and I, all of us who've been married a long time, we'll make jokes about, like, making grocery lists in our head. You know, I mean,
you and a lot of women thinking about the chores they have to do, right?
And it doesn't mean that we don't love having sex with our husbands. It means that we have too much on our minds. And a lot of girls say to me that, you know, as soon as the wedding was over, as soon as everything was done, In the case of one bride, she goes, it was amazing. I had no interest in anything romantic. So I got the text from my mother saying that they had gotten on their flight to go back home, and it was all over. And she's like, then all of a sudden it was like, all right, I'm going to go take a nap, and then when I wake up, I'm going to be sexy dressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can't feel sexy when there's too much on your shoulders.
Right. It's so true. And what you were saying before about the Pinterest, the guys don't realize how much pressure their fiancés are feeling to pull together and choreograph an amazing wedding. And you don't realize, you know, people think, oh, we'll get married and you get engaged. Again, there are so many events in living, from getting engaged, getting married, having a child, that are just part of the norm, and we go through these experiences. But really, everyone merits a full week of education, of what you need to know, of what you need to expect, of what you need to be prepared for, because people aren't even prepared, you of all folks would know, for a wedding. The enormity and the, you know, the scale of what goes into planning a wedding and pulling it off, and how many things can go wrong as well as right, and then dealing with all the emotional upheaval that goes on with that, and then whittle that down into, all right, let's get sexy. It's pretty tricky.
Yeah, it's very, very hard. And you know what? Some women are better at it than others. God bless them. And some women are just actresses, and I know this because you know. And then some women are just no baloney, you know. We're like, whatever, honey, I'll make it up to you in the morning. Don't shake the bed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's the truth. It's not that we don't love our husbands. It's not that we're not excited to have just been, you know, just gotten married. It's that there's too much going on.
Right. Well,
commit the way we need to.
Interesting. Well, speaking of commitment, let's take a break from talking about sex to talking about sexy fashion, because you don't have to be here in New York to want to be looking your best. In many places, it's your handbag. It's not your, you know, your nightgown. It's your handbag, which is a symbol of style. But designer bags can really be expensive. So that's where cashinmybag.com can really come in and be a great place to go. I've found great bags at a price you can afford, and they have lots of other luxurious items that'll make you feel terrific. More importantly, if you've got a bag that you want to get some money for and want to cash it in as opposed to just get rid of it, you can do that at cashinmybag.com. And if you're looking to purchase an accessory item, you can make a fashion statement without having a high bank statement. So check it out at cashinmybag.com. And stay with us. We're going to be back in a minute with more of the Let's Talk Sex Show at HealthyLife.net.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Let's Talk Sex Show at HealthyLife.net. My guest is wedding planner Sandy Malone. You can find her on Twitter at Sandy Malone or her website, www.sandymaloneweddings.com. Welcome back. So,
Dr. Greer.
Yes.
I'm standing in my closet right now looking at my purses since you told me about cashinmybag.com. I'm feeling terribly guilty because I have lots of purses that I've not shown any love to in a long time, designer purses. But at the same time, I might be a purse hoarder.
Well, there you go. Now you know what you can do and where you can set those bags free and let them find new owners who might give them a little TLC, and you can take on some new ones yourself, which would be terrific. And speaking of TLC, that is exactly what goes into the planning of the wedding and the wedding night. That you were saying earlier that the men look for the sex more in the physical, the women look for the emotional. If both people are looking to have that romantic sexual night, and the guy is really invested in it, can he extend a little bit more TLC throughout the event to make his new wife feel very special, very connected, so that the desire can be there? I mean, there have to be some couples who are making love and having romance on their wedding night.
I think there's a lot of couples who are. I just don't think the majority are. And I think of the couples who are, I think you got a lot better chance of having a romantic evening from the groom's end if he takes the initiative to set up a romantic environment. Because usually the brides that I work with have taken on more responsibility than the grooms at the wedding. Even when the grooms are involved in planning, the brides have a lot more stress on them than the grooms on the wedding day.
Right.
Most of the time. And so the last thing that most women have really got time, energy, or enthusiasm for is trying to create a romantic environment after they've survived all of that. Because it's not like it's the first time you've ever had sex.
Right.
It's not.
Right.
that isn't the big pinnacle of the night anymore.
Right, and that's what it used to be. That was the barometer against which your first night, you know, your wedding night having sex was measured against, was that, oh, you're able to have sex. But as you say, no, you've been having sex. And what about carrying them over the threshold? What do you hear about that?
I've heard some funny stories, and some involve injuries, but, you know, I think it depends where you are and how drunk he is.
So.
I mean, I had a, you know, I also had a bride that split her dress open when he picked her up because it wasn't ever meant for her to be bent in that position.
Oh, for God's sakes.
You know, I think it's hysterical. I think the more fun you can have with it, I mean, that was, again, a great farewell brunch story about the demise of her dress. It made it through the whole night and still he tried to carry over the threshold. But I think that when the groom makes the effort, you know, maybe when the bride goes in the bathroom, the groom lights some candles, you know, puts some surprise chocolates or some other treat that he's arranged for out and surprises her. Or maybe he, you know, if they are partying where they're staying, maybe he's nipped away into the room earlier and straightened things up and made it romantic. Just a little effort, you know, put their favorite music on the stereo. Do something where, you know, she sees that he made a romantic effort, because that's going to make a huge difference.
Right. It really does. And, you know, again, people very often just think it will happen. It will happen. It's supposed to happen. It will happen. And very often in life, that's not how we are. Just because it's supposed to happen doesn't mean it does. It really does require, just like sex on ordinary nights in the ordinary scope of your life requires a certain amount of mindfulness and awareness and planning and consideration, so too on your wedding night.
Right. And so it was one of those things when I talked to brides, I haven't heard a lot of them that were emotionally destroyed. They hadn't had sex, but I've just heard a lot of them joke about it. And I've also heard a lot of them joke about bad attempts at sex.
Well, that's what too much alcohol will do. It'll turn it into an attempt.
And it's not always that, because I had one bride say, I fell asleep.
Wow. Yeah, but
you know, here he is trying to get romantic with her. He's nibbling on her earlobe, and she's trying not to snore. It's okay, because the thing about it is the dynamics of the wedding day and the wedding night have changed. Because the having sex part isn't the biggest deal about your wedding. It's the thing I do.
Right.
So to some extent, the fact that we are a more sexually liberal culture has freed us up on our wedding day to actually focus on the really important thing.
Right. The vows and the commitment. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big deal of it. And so they're getting married, and they get married, and you know what? They can have sex every night for the rest of their lives. If it doesn't happen on their wedding night, who cares? I mean, if somebody's upset about it, then the other partner should definitely step up to the plate, so to speak. But it's more about making sure you're communicating about whether you're both on the same page.
Right. And that's such an important point and so well said, because that is really the essence of it all. As long as you both are okay with it, so she starts to snore, so he tries to, you know, make it happen and it ain't happening that night. So, I mean, I've even heard couples who've come in and said to me, you know, don't tell anyone, but we were busy counting what we took in terms of, you know, our gift money to know how much we had to pay off for the wedding. You know,
so
whatever it might be that could be the obstacle toward in your consummating your marriage on your wedding night, what's important is that you're both okay with it and can see, just like you're saying, the humor in it and can see the fun in it, and it's not where one of you is going to walk away feeling rejected or undesirable or disappointed or wounded, which is what happens in day-to-day living when one person is initiating sex and the other person is not responsive. You know, feelings get hurt, individuals sulk, people get wounded, people get angry, and so that's the last thing you want. That's the last bad taste you want in your mouth on your wedding night, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? If one partner is seriously desiring sex, I mean, that's a night that the other person needs to put up or shut up. You know what I mean? Like, just go for it. You know,
right.
You're going to be tired, but you need to just suck it up, be a part of the team here, because you don't want either one of them to go away. You don't want the bride or the groom to come away from the wedding night feeling like they were rejected or in any way, shape, or form. But what I have heard, and maybe I don't hear the bad stuff, because those who would be really sad about it wouldn't be talking about it.
No, they're talking to me.
Exactly. They're the ones that are talking to you. The ones I hear about are, generally speaking, the ones who are poking fun at each other.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's, and in a good way. It's so funny to listen to, but I don't think whether you have sex the wedding night is any kind of an indicator as to the success of your marriage and your relationship.
Well, you know what? That is the final word. That is such great advice. You are always giving us such insightful information on the inside scoop in terms of weddings and all that that goes on before, during, and after. So thank you so much for joining us for such a great conversation on weddings, sex, and marriage.
Thanks so much for having me back, Andrea. I appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure. And listeners, be sure to follow Sandy on Twitter at Sandy Malone or her website at underscore and her website, www.sandymaloneweddings.com. When we come back, author Antonia Hall. Stay with us. You're listening to the Let's Talk Sex Show at healthylife.net.
Podcast to help you reach your positive potential. HRNradio.com.
Welcome back to the Let's Talk Sex Show. I'm Dr. Jane Greer. My next guest is Antonia Hall. Antonia is an award-winning author of The Ultimate Guide to Multi-Orgasmic Life, a frequent radio and TV guest expert, a self-improvement guide, and a multi-orgasmic living expert. Her teachings offer ways to bring more pleasure, joy, creative flow, and meaning into one's life in and out of the bedroom. She's helped people worldwide through her writings, which blend science, spirituality, and sexuality in easy-to-implement practices that are truly transformative. So thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. So now you say that sexual energy is a potent power source which we can all tap into. So tell us more about that.
It's one of our most potent and enlivening, enriching forces that we can tap into, because sexual energy is inherently joyful, creative. So the more that we kind of get in touch with it and move it through the body and become aware of it in our everyday lives, the more it can reach every area of our life.
That's so true. And so being aware of it enables us to access a part of our energy force, which we can then use to enhance and heighten our quality of day-to-day living. But how do you encourage people to tap into it?
In the moment, we get so caught up because it's such a busy society, and we're doers, and we're achievers, and we're on to the next, and we're not taking the time to really get in touch with our senses, which are there to experience pleasure, and they're around us every day, all the time. So if you start to get in touch with the food that you're eating and the way the shower feels in the morning, and really like relax into the pleasures that we can derive from everyday experiences, it enriches everything and it makes you feel more juicy and delicious, because we're inherently sensual, sexual creatures.
It's so true. And why do you think people are oblivious to this facet of their, I want to say their personality, their energy, their essence, that a lot of times they're not even aware of it?
I don't think that we get that very often, the messages of, you're a sexual being and you should naturally express it. We kind of get the opposite, which is a real shame in our society, because sexuality is everywhere. You know, you turn on the TV and everything's filled with sex. But, like, really getting in touch with your own personal sexuality and how much that can enrich your life isn't something that we hear very often, which is really a pity.
It's so true. So what are some of the ways people can, first of all, before we even talk about how to live a multi-orgasmic life, what is a multi-orgasmic life?
I think that a multi-orgasmic life is really stepping into our potential to experience pleasure both in the everyday, as I said, and our own bodies, because we're wired for more pleasure than most of us have tapped into.
So interesting. So people have a difficult time with pleasure, don't they?
Yes.
And do you think it's just about sexual pleasure, or is it just about moment-to-moment, as you say, day-to-day pleasures in living? I mean, I know for myself and my work with many of my patients, just being able to encourage somebody to make sure they prioritize and preserve the pleasure as well as the necessity of having lunch to, you know, on a practical level, to refuel their body, to give their minds time to decompress, but also for the joy of eating when you're in the midst of a day, right? And so many people, or read a magazine, or take a walk around the block, all things that are de-stressors but are, that are pleasurable. And I hear over and over, I don't have time, I don't have time, I don't have time.
Right.
What? Why is that? Why are people so driven that the idea of doing something pleasurable that's also good for them is, you know, so abstract?
I don't think we're taught to do that. I think that we're taught to conquer and achieve, and that success is something that you have to continually strive for new successes, and so you don't have time to take care of yourself. But the irony there is that unless you're taking care of yourself and you're giving yourself these enriching activities, stopping and buying yourself flowers just to, or lazing about, taking a nice hot bath, those things actually fuel you, they recharge you, they regenerate that energy. And so, I don't know, I think that we're just not taught or encouraged to take care of ourselves anymore.
It's really such a shame, because without taking care of yourself, doesn't that hamper your ability to access your sexual energy and enhance your sexual life with a partner?
So very much. Because if we can't give it to ourselves, we have trouble accepting it and giving it to another.
It's so true. So talk about the blending of spirituality, sexuality, and science. That's a mouthful. Those are the three S's. How do they all go together?
Well, they go together beautifully, because the ancient wisdom has told us for thousands of years that we're all part of an interconnected. And science is starting to show this in really fascinating ways. So we look at the quantum physics that looks at energy patterns, that we're all just energy. And sexual energy is a part of us that is really potent and juicy and amazing. And when you can learn to cultivate it and bring it through the body, it will enrich you. It's like putting you on a charger, and it doesn't take much time to do it. You can put 10 minutes in the morning of moving sexual energy through your body, and it puts you in the flow. Like, the whole day, you're going to feel more charged up. People are going to be attracted to that because you're fueled. You're not out chasing, trying to succeed, trying to achieve. You're, like, in that flow of, like, that interconnectedness. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, what you're talking about is very often what people describe when they're doing something that they truly enjoy, that is truly pleasurable, an activity, a hobby, a sport. If they're playing golf, if they're playing tennis, even if you're driving and you sort of get, you know, caught up in the, you know, the sort of the mindlessness of it, people really relax. Or you're reading a book, you know, they will call it an escape, but you are in the moment and you're not bogged down with all the things crowding your mind that you have to do. You're very much focused on what you are doing, which is literally being in the moment and experiencing the moment as it's happening, not while
it's
you're
a
thinking
powerful
about it.
Powerful practice.
Right?
Yes.
Do you think that meditation is a way to enhance that for people?
I'm a strong proponent of meditation, and there are many, many forms of meditation. So there's moving meditation, there's stillness. For me, I love to go out and just watch the ocean wave, and it completely brings me back to center and recharges me, because I've taken that time to stop and just be.
Right. So it's interesting, as you're talking about watching the ocean, that's why people will sit and watch the fish, because that very act of just watching something in motion that is calming and soothing, that awareness, that heightened awareness, just helps you relax and helps your whole body calm down. Well, on that relaxed note, we're going to take a break at the Let's Talk Sex Show, so stay with us. We're going to be back in just a minute at HealthyLife.net.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
HealthyLife.net. My guest is author Antonia Hall. You can find more from her on Twitter at EdenSoul, E-D-E-N-S-O-L, or her website, www.antoniahall.com. So you have in your book, and we're talking about allowing for pleasures and the things that can block pleasure, and one of the chapters in your book, which is so powerful and compelling, is on forgiveness, gratitude, forgiveness, and heart intelligence. Why is that so important, and how does that contribute to a healthier sex life and a more multi-orgasmic life?
Any forgiveness work that we have not done is going to hinder our ability to connect with others in every area of our lives, especially in partnerships. So it's really important to let go of the past and not carry it with you, or it will mar all of your other relationships. And you deserve more than that.
You know, that's so interesting what you're saying, which is people do not realize that if you harbor anger or resentment in one facet of your life with one person, a lot of times people will say to me, oh, well, I stopped talking to my sister, but she's in California, or she's in, you know, Washington, and I don't have to see her or deal with her. And then they'll launch into telling me about how they're fighting with a colleague at work or with their boss, and without realizing it, have recreated the exact conflict and drama that they have with their sister. And so you're right. When you have that anger or resentment that you carry around, you carry it around and you carry it into other relationships, and it's energy which siphons away from your capacity for pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really restricts you.
So how do you encourage people to be aware of that and to move on from that?
Well, forgiveness work is really a gift to ourselves, because we're releasing ourselves from past stories. And you can choose to carry a story with you, but I really want better for people than that. And you deserve to have such an enriching and healthy life. Everybody does. So being able to look at any gifts that arose from situations that we are not fond of, and letting go of that, there are different ways to release anger, frustration. Doing some kind of ceremony for yourself is really, really powerful.
Right. Yes, it's so true. People, what you said before, do not realize that forgiveness is something you do for yourself. You know, you must have heard the expression, revenge is like taking poison and waiting for the other person to die. You know, and people don't realize that. They get so caught up in self-righteous in their anger without understanding that their anger becomes then their obstacle to joyful pleasures in living.
Mm-hmm. All of it will get in the way of your being able to really connect and have true intimacy.
It's so true. So talk to us about the multiple and the full body orgasms, which are total pleasure, and what they are, and can anybody have them?
Oh, yes. So both men and women are multi-orgasmic, and tapping into that potential, we are all capable of rolling orgasms through the body, hands off. And the more that you learn to move that energy through, the more it is going to give you the most mind-bending orgasms.
So how does one learn to do that?
For women, you start to, first, you have to do Kegels. You have to, the pubococcygeus muscle is your friend. You want to start doing Kegels every day, men and women both. If you're not already, it will help you move that energy through, and it will help you immensely to amplify those orgasms. And you can start learning how to roll them through the body, which is what I call full body orgasm. And both men and women can do this. It's just it's a skill that you learn. And I have very, very detailed practices for both men and women, different chapters in the Ultimate Guide to a Multi-Orgasmic Life. So you just start doing the practices. It's immensely powerful. And once you learn how to do them, they will be your friend for life.
It sounds so enticing, and yet I know from so many people, I was talking to somebody the other day, who one of my people, who was saying, oh, you know, I've got to put some good practice into play for the new year, you know, the New Year's resolutions, and I'm going to start going to yoga. I'm going back to yoga, and I'm going to get to at least two classes a week. And I'm listening to this, and I know that the wild card is their work, and that anything can happen. They're in a very, you know, active setting. So I said, well, how are you going to do that? They said, well, you know, I'm just going to clear the time and I'm going to do it. You know, the only wild card is work. I said, well, yeah, that's the wild card. I said, you were able to get there once before on a weekly basis. What about if you plan it on a weekly basis and cover the one, and then if you've got more time or you can make the second one happen, great. But if not, at least you've planned success, as opposed to planning for two. And then if you don't get to the two, you say, oh, what the heck, it's not worth it, I can't do it, and you've not accomplished your goal. So keeping it modest and realistic helps people accomplish what they want. In using some of the techniques in your book, how do you suggest they keep it simple and modest so that they don't open the book and get overwhelmed with, oh, my God, how do we do this? Where are we going to have the time? I'm not going to be able to do this. And then, boom, the book is on the shelf. And the opportunity to really transform the quality of their love life is ended with good intention. I mean, so much good intention is out there.
Absolutely. We all have great intent. And none of my chapters are more than a couple of pages. It's a couple of pages and then an exercise, and a couple of pages and an exercise. And the amazing thing is, the more that you implement those practices, the more you're going to have energy. There are super simple breathing techniques that will help energize you or help calm you down, because breathing can do either one depending on the breath work. So, and there's an audiobook. So if you're on the go, you can have me read the book to you.
That's great.
And it's really, I wrote it with the intent that we are all super busy. So it's just a couple pages and an exercise, and it's broken up into sections, so it's really easy to just find the section that you want. You can cheat and go to the tools and start using them, but they're really easy to implement.
See, I think what you just said is really important for all our listeners out there. You know, sometimes we get a book and we think, oh, I have to read everything to get to this particular chapter, to get to that. Sometimes I'll give a patient one of my books and I'll say, you just need to read chapter 7. That's your chapter. Sometimes to know that it's okay, to not have to do it all, that you can just skim into the book and line up what's going to be meaningful and purposeful for you, and you, at the moment, can rest and that you can have a really terrific takeaway from it helps people get into it in the first place, right? So what you just said, your suggestion and the way that you wrote the book to be able to, you know, one from column A, one from column B, is terrific. Great, great approach. And on that note, we're going to move away into a commercial, so stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute at the Let's Talk Sex Show at HealthyLife.net.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net. Millions of listeners know the secret. Now you do, too. Positive talk 24 hours a day, every day.
Well, Antoni, I want to thank you for such a fascinating conversation on living a multi-orgasmic life. So much for being here. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Terrific. And that's it for today. For more on Shrink Wrap, don't forget to pick up this month's issue of Celebrity Page magazine, available at newsstands now. Join me next week for a special encore episode. Stay in touch with me off the air at my Facebook page and on Twitter at Dr. Jane Greer. And thanks for listening, everyone. Remember, you can always get what you want when you're in the know.